Shabbat Shalom and welcome to another action-packed, fun-filled week of Living Torah. I got to say something different sometimes. One of those days, right? You know, all kinds of things are going on these days. I was on the phone last night. You know, we got fires in all over the West. We got floods down in Florida. I've lived in both places. Talked to my cousin last night as she was trying to get home in Jacksonville. And the water was, I haven't talked to him this morning, as of last night, the water was coming up right at the porch. There was no yard, and it just all was water, and all over the place. In fact, one of our board members and his family live in Crawford, outside of Crawfordville. They actually saw Crawfordville in McCulloch County on the Weather Channel and news. 15 inches of rain. Now, understand, in that area, they're about 7 to 10 feet above sea level. And so you put over a foot of rain into an area like that, and it's just not going to go away for a long time. And then all that happens with that, I was talking to our board member, actually his wife yesterday, and I just happened to tell her, you know, hey, when these floods come, guess what comes out of the woods? You know, every snake, every alligator, all the bugs, everything starts coming out. And it is, I've lived through some of this down there. In fact, the church that I pastored, we had 18 inches of water in that church during one of the hurricanes many years ago. This rain, this water, is higher than that ever thought about being. Probably down in that area, 2 to 3 feet of water. So, you know, pray for the folks down there that they would have favor with, you know, insurance companies and various people they'll be working with. Of course, on the other side, Colorado, Utah, California, specifically Colorado Springs, making the news with the fires that are going on there. We lived up in Woodland Park. I've driven that road up through Manitou Springs and right next to the fire that's going on. I can't remember the name of it specifically, but there's talking about as of the taping that I'm doing here. This is Wednesday morning, the 27th. As of this taping, they were going to be evacuating the Air Force Academy. This is just horrendous. And of course, our daughter, son-in-law, grandson live up in Fort Collins. They've got a fire going up around Boulder. It's looks like it's going west, though. So as of this taping, they're doing okay. And here in the center, yesterday, I think up in, up in South Dakota or something, 109 degrees. Okay, everything's normal. You know, life just kind of goes on, and, you know, where is the promise of his coming and the things happening? It's here. It's all over the place, folks. And anybody, a blind squirrel, could figure out that the world is rapidly changing with economics and all kinds of things. And still we have people that say, oh, that preparation stuff is not of faith. You know, tell that to somebody who got flooded out last night in Florida and didn't have any water, didn't have any way to take care of themselves. Tell that to a person who left their home in Colorado with nothing, absolutely nothing, instead of having some things in line in order for them to take care of. It's just, these are the days that we live in. And so I'm not going to go totally into that, but, you know, I think you can tell where I'm going there. Speaking of going there, I will actually be there in Colorado here this weekend. We just put together something very fast. I've got a few announcements here this morning I'm going to walk through. Just real quick, I had someone from California call me just a couple weeks ago and say, you know, I'd been there a few years ago. And I had been doing a little bit of teaching on preparedness, and they said, you know, the area, they weren't quite ready for that at the time. They said, we need to get ready. And so I put this together really spur of the moment. This Friday night, the 29th, God willing, I'll be with Kelly and John Mills. That's Kelly Ferrari Mills. And I'll be in, I think it's, is that Eaton? Everything's going to be on my website by then, by the time you get this video. So I'll be in outside of, it's actually south of Greeley, I believe it is. Be with them Friday night, Shabbat. I'll be in Denver, outside of, in actually Golden, with the Hayavel team. They've got a conference going on there. It's going to be Friday, Shabbat, and Sunday. There's still many spots there. You can register for it. It's at a campground, and so the costs are minimal. And it'll be Tommy and the group. I'll be there on Shabbat, kind of just sitting around doing nothing, I think. But I'm going to be there with them. And so if you can get around there and find out, see what's going on. We just, the Wallers were just here with us last weekend, had an incredible time with them. More on that in just a moment. So I'll be with them on Shabbat. I got to go spend a day with the grandson and spoil him a little bit at the park maybe. And then I'm going to head up to Montrose. I'll be there on the 4th of July. And then on over to Kingman, Arizona next week. Go to the website and you can see all these events. Lucerne Valley, California, a week from Friday, and then into Lancaster, California, and back home. So if you're anywhere in the midst of that and I've got an open night, you'd like to schedule that, let me know. I've got one or two maybe open nights there. So if you're somewhere in that area, if not, you know, you drive. Hey, I'm driving 2,000 miles. Don't tell me you can't drive 100 miles, okay? All right, next. Letters. I had a question this past weekend. Letters to Israel. I need to go over this again. No, you do not have to have gone to Israel. You just have to have a love for Israel, okay? The letters need to be sent to me, emailed directly to me. You can see a kind of a sample on our website under the Isaiah 56 Project. It says Mike's Story, and that's the letter that I sent to Israel. What we need is just letters about your journey to coming to a love for Torah, a love for Israel, a love for the Jewish people, and no preaching, no evangelizing. We're building a bridge, okay? You have to build the bridge before you can walk on it. And so be very careful in your wording. But you do not have to have gone to Israel. You just have to have a love for and a yearning for Israel. More on that in just a moment. Next, as I'm out on the road this time, I have the notes are almost finished for a new message that I've done right now. I have titled that Footprints of Mashiach, and it is my take on prophecy. Okay, there's all kinds of voices out there, and so I'm going to give you the right voice. All right, no, that's not it. I'm just going to give you another voice. Okay, and maybe through all these voices, including mine, you can walk out a balanced walk in the days ahead. So I'm real excited about this message. I think it's a very important, not because of what I'm saying, but there's just some things that are coming together that I believe you're going to be, it's one that you need to get. And so that will be available. We will actually tag it on the website probably another week. I'll put it on the newsletter, and it'll be available as soon as I get back, which will be about the 7th, 8th, 9th, something like that. As soon as I get back, we'll get this thing edited. We'll get it on there. Kathy will get it in the mail to you. So by the middle of the month, okay, and this is for those who donate, who partner with us, and help me to do all the things that I'm doing out here. And one of those is a very special announcement today that, let's see if I can get through this one. It looks like, God willing, Bezrat Hashem, that I'll be in Israel for about 9 months this year during the harvest and during Sukkot. And worked out this out with Tommy and Sherry Waller this past weekend. We sat and talked about it. And I've got one engagement that's September, the first part of September, the first weekend, I think it is. Our daughter and son-in-law and grandson are coming in. And I'm not going to even ask my daughter to try to understand that I'm going to go to Israel. I'm not even going to go there because, you know, something in the scheme of things, as important as Israel is to me, our family should be number one. And this is a way of kind of making that statement. So as soon as they're gone, probably the day that they leave, I'll be getting on a plane. Kathy's going to be coming over for a couple weeks in the middle. I know a couple of other people from this area that are going to come over for a time. You can go to the Hayovel website, Hayovel. There are There's two 3-week tours. You can do either or of the 3-week tours. There's a 6-week and a 10-week. And so I'll actually be there for the kind of for the 10, but I'll be missing the first week there. So I'll be there. It looks like for 9 weeks this year, helping with the harvest and being there for Sukkot. And you know, already the registration is running ahead of what it was last year. Last year there was 300 people that picked 360 tons of grapes, along with some olives and some pomegranates and various things that are going on. I want to challenge you. Let me just take a few minutes. We'll get right into the scriptures after this. I want to challenge you, folks. There are some of you that have never been to Israel for one reason or another, and they're basically excuses. Now, there's some people out there, I don't try to condemn folks, okay? There's some people that have reasons why. Maybe it's health or things like this. It's just not possible for you to go right now. There's others that have just been making excuses. And I'd like you to consider, sit down and really consider the reasons that you haven't gone before, the reasons you're not planning to go right now to Israel. Is it an excuse or is it a reason? If it's a reason, hey, you know, kolokovot, more strength to you. But if it's just an excuse of something, I'd like you to actually consider that. And, you know, this is the time of Sukkot. What are we called to do? We're called to go to Jerusalem. And I know that not everybody can do that right now. But I was thinking about this morning, that the scripture says that in the millennium, the nations will send representatives to Israel, to Jerusalem, to be there during the feast of the festival of Sukkot. And those that do not, they will not get any rain in their area. You look at Colorado and Utah and California, they probably ought to send somebody. They probably ought to send a lot of people to Sukkot. Maybe you guys in Florida, you know, I don't know. But maybe we could, you know, and we're not in the millennium. And this is not the time of the nations going, but maybe we could take an example of that. And maybe let's say you can't go, okay? It's just not possible for you to go right now. Now, don't say that, you know, I can't, because, there's no way I can go, all these things. If God will, you know, as my grandmother used to say, God willing and the creek don't rise. Well, if He's willing, doesn't matter if the creek rises, right? You guys in Florida, He can make a way. He can make a way. So don't say, I can't go, but lay it out there for Him. And if the answer for you right now is, it's not your time to go, all right? Then what about getting together with your community? Or those of you that are by yourself, you know, let's pool this thing together somehow. And maybe in your community, send representatives. You know, send a representative. Let's say if every congregation that is out there, there's lists, you know, that you know of today, if each congregation sent a representative to Israel, we would not be renting vans. We would be renting buses. We would be, it would be, oh, I cannot even tell you what it would be to have. We would have a logistic nightmare. I would love to give Tommy and Zach and these guys this year a logistic nightmare because of people who got a hold of this thing and said, I need to not just study prophecy, not just look at prophecy, not just dwell on and try to figure out prophecy, but I'm going to be prophecy this year. So I want you to just consider that. Okay, lay it out there before the Almighty. See what happens. All right? Is it expensive? Yeah, plane tickets right now are out of Oklahoma City are running about $1,700. It's going to the land, depending on how long you're there for, you can go to the Ohio Bell website and you can get all this information. It's about $300 a week. Now, that's not expensive, all right? which include your transportation and your food and some touring and the ability to go out there and harvest the grapes. I just think this is an opportunity that many of us need to deal with. The other side is, let's consider Sukkot. Those of you that you're not supposed to be going, okay? And I want to be very clear. Not everybody is supposed to go right now, all right? It's up to each one, individual, your calling, and what the Almighty desires of you today. But for those that are supposed to go, or those are not going to be going right now, what about your Sukkot offering? You know, what are you going to do with that? There is to be a Sukkot offering. And is your Sukkot offering to just further, you know, some entertainment? And your, you know, in the Hebrew roots Messianic movement, sometimes Sukkot has been turned into, well, this is my vacation time, and this is my party time, and this is my, and I, you know, I am going to do this. And what's wrong with that? It's all focused on yourself. If it's not focused on His kingdom, then we have the wrong priority. So I'd like to challenge you. We're going to be taking funds over there, God willing, as long as it comes in, and I haven't ticked off everybody yet. We're going to be taking funds to the land to give away to people, to places during Sukkot. I want to be giving these offerings from you to make this, for many people, a joyous time in Israel, to help with the children, the Shiloh children's hospital, to various places there that I know are doing a good work. So I just throw that out to you right now. We're going to, of course, I'll be mentioning this more and more as we get closer. So, you know, if you don't want to hear it, well, that's, you know, it's the way it is. But our focus is going to be toward His kingdom and the land, and sending as many people as we possibly can today as a seed in earnest money to show that our focus is not just upon ourselves, but is actually on this reunion that's happening in front of our eyes, that the brothers, the older brother and the prodigal son, are being brought back together. Okay. All right, with that, let me get off of that, because I'll probably get in trouble if I say a lot more. We're going to go back couple of verses to Matthew chapter 7, verse 28. Then Yeshua had finished saying these things. The crowds were amazed at the way He taught, for He was instructing them, not like the scribes and Pharisees, but as one who had authority Himself. What is He? He's teaching with passion, okay? And He's teaching not just with a passion that is external, but it is a passion that is coming from His heart, because He's teaching these things that are in Him, okay? He is the living Torah. Unlike what the person said a few weeks ago, I believe totally and completely Yeshua is the living Torah. He is the Torah that was made flesh and dwelt among us. And so what was He doing? As the Torah was inside of Him, it is just coming out. And if it is inside of you, whatever is inside of you, when you teach about it, when you talk about it, it's going to be an authority, a passion. I don't care if you're a worm farmer, and worm farming is your passion, okay? When you speak of worm farming, it's going to come out with a voice of authority that even those that don't care a thing about worm farming are going to go, wow, I never knew worm farming was so incredibly exciting. Why? Because it's something inside. How much more Yeshua, the living Torah, that is teaching the Torah from inside of Him. See, those that are called the Torah teachers in David Stearns, but the scribes and Pharisees, the Torah was an external thing. It was about the halakha. It was all about the external walk. It was not, and this is a judgment, because it wasn't all of them that were like this, but the ones He's speaking of right here, okay? Because we see Nicodemus and various ones later on. But the vast majority, I would say, of the religious leaders of the day, it was all about externals. Now, don't go pointing fingers too fast at them, because I'd have to go around right here within just miles of my home, of your house, of wherever you are. And on Sunday mornings, there are many people, and we'll get to that a little bit later on, that are, it's all about the external. It's all about what I'm wearing to church, and how I look, and how my makeup is, and my hair is, and my new car that I'm driving, and the rings on my fingers, and all of those things. It's about an external facade instead of a heart issue. And so, Yeshua is speaking to a group of people who are hungry. It says in verse 1 of chapter 8, after Yeshua had come down from the hill, large crowds followed him for various reasons at this point. Some were just curious. Some, I believe, were kind of following the latest and greatest fad along the way. You know, I was told years ago in Tulsa that if you wanted to build a church in Tulsa, you just went out and, you know, you got a nice building and a nice drummer and a guitar player and some good, you know, heavy music, and you'd have a flock of people that would come for a time because they were trying to find the latest and greatest. And are we not, I mean, is that not a statement about people in general? But even in the Hebrew roots, messianic community, you know, wow, did you see this ministry and that? Wow, these people are new. They got the hottest, newest thing on the market, you know. Be careful. Be careful. Because sometimes the newest and greatest, boldest and baddest, maybe is not in line. And we're gonna pull that together in just a moment, okay? Don't be so excited about just the newest and greatest unless you're willing to follow it for the right reason. Find the right reasons. Now, these people had the right reason to follow because it's the Messiah, okay? But they were following just to see the excitement of what was going on. They were not following it. Well, there was a group. There was a group that would follow because there were something happened in their heart. It's kind of like many of the people I talk to. You go back and you say to them, "Can you remember? You know, what got you involved in all this?" And they say, "It was the moment that I heard a shofar." They said, "Something happened to me." I've been around many people that have heard a shofar for the first time, just broken down, weeping, because something happened inside of them. There's a group here that are following him for the right reason, because his heart has spoken to their heart. Those that speak from their heart will have people attracted to them that listen from their heart. Okay, it's got to be inside that Agadah that is pulling at us. So, you know, the old thing, that just pulled at my heartstrings. That's a word that is here. That there was people that were following him because he had pulled at their heartstrings. And in verse 1, he is going to go now, speaking of this heart and walk, Yeshua is going to take, now that he is established in what he has spoken from his heart, he will now put feet to those words. And this is the way it's got to be. This is the pattern that it has to be. That it has to be the heart which produces the walk. Because the walk will never produce the heart. It's got to be a passion that comes from inside. And it says, as he was going along, and he's actually going somewhere, then a man afflicted with, and it's leprosy is how this is translated in most scriptures, and we're just going to use the word leprosy here because it's easier for me to say than the Hebrew word here. But it is not, this is not a leprosy like what we see, at least this is the consensus of most people out there. This is not a leprosy like we see in, this comes from some third world countries and is found in various places today. This leprosy goes back into Leviticus. We have talked about that in years previous. And the leprosy was upon clothing and upon a house. And you can't get a disease on a house, right? So leprosy in that day, this is thought to be a specific disease, a specific ailment, a specific thing that is given by Yah Himself to expose sin, to expose secret sin. And so we go back to, we see this in the book of Numbers with Miriam. It was a scaling. It was something that happened to the skin, which you can't cover all of that, right? Somebody's going to see it. It was some kind of a scaling that was happening. And this is actually the same word that is used over in the book of Acts when Paul has his encounter. And it is the same word of leprosy that is this scaling. This disease literally came upon his eyes as scales upon his eyes. It was revealing something inside of him. This, I believe, is why, and we get to that, if we ever get to the book of Acts. This is a disease that, when Paul, that was trained at the feet of Gamaliel, who was like the grandson of Hillel, okay, these guys go back into Torah a long ways. Paul knew what was going on. He knew this is not just something out of the ordinary. This is not something that I just kind of bonked my head and something happened. I didn't just scrape up against something and got, like poison ivy. Paul knew this was something that had come from Yah Himself to expose something in his life. And to this man, right here, it says that a man came with this zarat, kneeled down in front of him, Yeshua, and said, "Sir, if you're willing, you can make me clean." What's happening here? First of all, it says he kneeled down in front of Yeshua. He had seen who Yeshua was. He had felt. This is one of the people that had the words of Yeshua had tugged upon his heartstrings. This is a man that is very probable was Hebraic. He was Jewish, and this man probably knew the Torah and the prophets. And he knew that one of the signs of the Messiah that comes out of the prophets, one of the signs that would prove who the Messiah was, is that he would cure the leper. Who better to cure those who had a disease given by Yah Himself to expose secret sin? Who better to cleanse that than the one who had given it to him? So he's acknowledging in his words, "If you are willing, sir, Adonai, if you are willing, you can make me clean." He's acknowledging who Yeshua is standing there in front of him. And he knows that Yeshua has the power to do so. And it is because of this man's humility, this man's repentance. You can just kind of feel it in the words here. "If you're willing, make me clean. I repent for what has caused this disease to come upon me. I beg your mercy, sir. Adonai, which means Sir, I beg your mercy upon me. I desire to turn from my ways into your... it doesn't say all... Yes, it does. I see all of that in these words. And at once he was clean from the Sarat. Then Yeshua said to him, See that you tell no one. But as a testimony to the people, go to the Kohen, the priests, and let them examine you, and offer the sacrifice that Moshe... What? Offer the sacrifice? I thought that was in the process of being... Oh yes, it's in the process of being done away with. So Messiah's just kind of... No, I'm not even going there, alright? I went there enough to prove my point. Go to the Kohen and let them examine you, and then offer the sacrifice. Now, why? Why does Yeshua say to this man that he's not to tell anybody? I think there's levels, many, many levels to this statement. First of all, Messiah is not walking here in on his way to Capernaum, to Farnachum. He's on his way to Capernaum. I mean, from where he was on the Mount of Beatitudes, he is going to Capernaum. Okay, did you get the map of Israel that I told you to get a long time ago? If you did, look at it. Measure the distance between the two. Okay, if you didn't get that map, there's one on my website. You can get that. You need to order one. Okay. How can you keep Israel in front of you if you don't have Israel in front of you in some way? All right? So, I'll leave that alone. as he's walking, it's only a couple of miles, maybe at the most, 2 or 3 miles. I think that's a stretch, really. And so, he's walking this distance, and here this man reaches out to him. Now, why does he tell this guy not to tell everybody? Because of who he is. He is not the king at the moment. He has not come as Mashiach ben David, Messiah son of David. He has come here as Mashiach ben Yosef, the suffering servant, the one who has come to serve. And a servant never, never desires to draw attention to themselves. A servant is always putting the attention toward the master. And so in these words, Yeshua is literally kind of laying out for the people who are listening who he is. His motivation is he's laid that out for them also. Now he's done this work of healing this person. And it's not about publicity, because, I mean, if in that moment that he had just, you know, said, okay, let me tell you who I am, they would have wanted to take him directly to Jerusalem and crown him as king. It wasn't the time for that. Other aspect is this. This person needed to put some feet to what he was saying. All right? He has been living in some kind of sin. There's some type of secret sin that he has been harboring in his life that has produced this outward thing called leprosy, Sarat. And Yeshua says, now before you can talk, you need to walk. Before you can talk about it, you need to walk out the instructions that you haven't been living up until this point. Do not tell anybody until you have gotten your own life straight. Straighten out your life first, and then you'll be a witness. look, here, I had sin in my life. I've now been cleansed. I did these things as fruit of repentance. And now let me tell you about the one who caused this all to happen. Don't talk about your fruit until you have some. Don't boast. This is a new phrase this morning. Okay, this one's hot off the press. You can write this out. As a friend of mine says, these Mike-isms, this is one of them. Don't boast about your fruit unless you have some. Don't talk about your fruit till you have some. It's like going out into a garden and boasting about this, you know, the wonderful fruit that you're going to have. And then all of a sudden a hailstorm comes and you have nothing. Or a tornado or a fire or a flood comes and you have nothing. And then what are you boasting about? Nothing. When you have fruit, then you can talk about the fruit. But not until that time. And he's coming into Capernaum. A Roman army officer came up and pleaded for help. Now, what's this guy? He's there. He's a Roman officer, okay? Rome is in charge right now of Israel, of Jerusalem specifically. And they would have stationed their officers and small groups. I mean, it doesn't take a lot of military people to control Jewish people, right? Because they're not normally known for being real rebellious because they're living according to the Torah or some form of, all right? That's not a condemnation. But Jews are normally not militant, you know, unless they're backed into a corner and have to be, all right? They're always seeking peace. And so it didn't take a huge, you know, it didn't take a battalion of people in Capernaum to kind of keep the peace up there. Actually, it probably took, you know, they've got the Roman officer and one orderly, and that was probably too many people up there to keep the peace in that area. And so, who is this guy? I mean, he's probably got a lot of time on his hands, right? It's not taking him a lot to keep the peace. Somewhere along the way, we don't know where, he starts seeing something. Starts seeing something in these Jewish people, these Hebrews, because there was a mixed multitude, a mixed tribes in that area in that day. He starts seeing something in them and is attracted to it. It's like last week I got an email. Then in South Korea, where I'm going to be going to, God willing, next month for our son's wedding, our oldest son's wedding. Say that like that because some of you will say, when did Daniel? No. Stephen's wedding. It says that they have just started to have all of their high school children, I think it is, to study the Talmud. Why? Because they've seen that the Jewish people excel above everyone else. And they said there's something about it. There's something about those people. There's a wisdom coming from them. What is it? They said it must be in those writings. So they're having their people, their children, their youth, to study the Talmud. How cool is that? So, wow, I could go on with that for a while. But, okay, back to the story. So here this guy comes in and he sees something. Sees something different. What is it? What is it? And he becomes interested. He's in Capernaum. They have Shabbat services every Shabbat in the synagogue, which is like right there, you know. I mean, it's not like a long walk. It's no matter where you're at in Capernaum, you're within like 100 yards. No matter where you're at, you're within about 100 yards of the synagogue. And so could he be one of these people that kind of started, well, you know, kind of stand on the door and then inside the door, and I better keep the peace inside the synagogue, so I'm going to get kind of closer and closer. And he starts to see this Torah. But he doesn't desire to convert according to the rabbinical, pharisaical, sadduceitical, is that a word? Sadduceitical, something like that. customs of the day. He just wants to follow Hashem. He just wants to be joined to Hashem, Isaiah 56. And maybe he reads that word, those words in Isaiah 56:6 one day, says, "That's who I want to be." And he falls in love with the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God of Israel. He studies about the Messiah, and all of a sudden this man's coming to him, and he says, "Sir, my orderly is lying at home paralyzed and suffering terribly." Yeshua said to him, "I will go and heal him." But the officer said, "Sir," this is the words of Adonai, "I am unfit to have you come into my home. Rather, if you give the command, my orderly will recover. For I too am a man under authority. I have soldiers under me. And I say to this one, go, and he goes, and to another, come. And he comes," thank you, Kathy, for getting the phone, "to another, come, and he comes, to my slave, do this, and he does it." And on hearing this, Yeshua was amazed and said to the people following him, "Yes, I tell you, I have not found anyone in Israel with such trust, such faith." This account is incredible to me, because here is a man who is kind of like you and I. He's a Roman. He's a foreigner. He was a Gentile. He falls in love somehow with the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and finds the Messiah in the midst of that. And when he's face to face with the Messiah, he says, you know, "My orderly." I mean, think about this. This man has a servant's heart. So it's like a servant speaking to a servant. You know, "Your orderly." That's kind of like the lower on the totem pole. That's like many years ago, MASH, right? You know, you had Colonel Potter and Radar. Or then it was Klinger or whatever. And, you know, most, or a lot of times, a commander doesn't really care much about their orderly. They're just somebody who does a job. This is servant to servant. And is also, at the same time, authority figure to authority figure. And this man, because of who he has been, and probably because he finds himself trapped within the Roman system, he looks at Yeshua and says, "Sir, Adonai, no, no. You don't need to come to my house. I am not worthy of your presence." There's a message in there. "I'm not worthy of your presence. Just say the word. Because I know that you're a man of authority. And I know you have authority over what is wrong with my orderly. The same as you had authority over what just happened right there with the man with leprosy. You don't need to come, just say a word." And Yeshua marvels. He marvels and says, I have not found anyone in the family of Israel. Get this. I have not found anyone of the natural seed of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob who has such authority. Who has such faith, such trust. And because of that faith and trust, I'm going to do a miracle in you, a miracle for your orderly, that is going to make these people around me that are of the natural seed jealous. I wonder if there's a message there somewhere. I just wonder. If you hadn't got that one, you need to go back in a little ways and start reading over again. He goes on and he says, "Moreover, I tell you that..." Let's stop a little bit there. This, what produced the amazement in Yeshua. This man understood who he was, and he understood that he was going to have to place himself, just as he had been under the authority of Rome, he was now going to have to come under the authority of the Creator of the universe. That concept is kind of like our lives. But it brings up an issue of going back to the Father, you know, that we talked about weeks ago. How do you handle authority? The reason this man could set himself up is because he was dealing with authority the right way. I still see so many people out there, not just in the world. You expect the world to do, you know, don't expect a duck to not quack. Okay, if they're a duck, you know, if they're quacking, there's a reason. It's because they're a duck. All right? If you expect the world to, you know, to do something different than quack, they're not going to. But I'm talking about people within this Hebrew roots restoration today. How do you handle authority? Your relationship with the Almighty is tied to how you deal with authority. Goes on. Moreover, I tell you, and moreover, I'm going to add now to what has just happened. I tell you that many will come from the east and from the west to take their places at the feast in the kingdom of heaven with Abraham, Isaac, and Yaakov. The feast, a Sukkot. But those born of the kingdom will be thrown outside in the dark where people will wail and grind their teeth. Now, stop. There are people today that believe that everyone's going to be saved. The whole world's going to be saved. You know, oh, it's God's desire that all Israel should be saved. Yes, it's His desire that all of the natural seed of Israel will be saved. It's my desire that someone would buy me a brand new truck. But not really, I don't like the newer ones. But you know, a new one for me. It's my desire that somebody would send, you know, like $1 million so I can, you know, I can sponsor like, you know, 500 people to go to Israel or more. That's my desire. Just because it's my desire doesn't mean it's going to happen, because it's going to have to be somebody else that's going to make a decision, right? God's desire is one thing, but your choice, our choices limit His desire. His desire that is that all should be saved, but not all are going to be saved. It's our desire. Let me give you another one. It's our desire that our children would walk according to the words of this book. It's their choice whether they do or not. Okay? And there's some that say, well, you know, this outer darkness thing, and there's no such thing as Hades and all this stuff. Well, what is that? There will be those who are outside in the dark, and there will be wailing and gnashing of teeth. Go to Isaiah chapter 66, the last verse. What is that? Oh, that's just an allegory. No. It's a physical place for all of eternity. There will be those who are of the natural seed of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob that have said, oh, well, you know, I'm born Jewish. That makes me okay. The thing is, there are a lot of people out there that are born Jewish, and nobody's ever explained to them why that's not just okay. But it's more than just being born of a seed of Abraham. It has to be a heart issue. Now, let's don't point fingers real fast at the Jews, because I know people in the Baptist church, or in the Methodist church, or, oh no, the Pentecostal and charismatic churches. I think just because They're showing up to a building. Just because they've said some words, just because they've walked an aisle, signed their name to a card, everything's going to be okay. No. No. He says in the verses we used last week, "Depart from me. I never had an intimate relationship with you. It's not in your heart. It's just external." These verses are not just for the Jews. These verses are for each of us. Each person who has never come to a personal relationship. Now, I've preached a lot of funerals. I've been at a lot of funerals. At a funeral, everybody goes to heaven. Everybody's wonderful and great, and there will be those who were cast into outer darkness that thought because they were born of a natural seed, signed their names to a card, but their lives have never been touched, have never been changed by the power of His Spirit. Go let it be for you as you have trusted, and his orderly was healed from that very moment. No doubt. Yeshua went to Kepha's home, and there he saw Kepha's mother-in-law sick in bed with a fever. He touched her hand, the fever left her, and she got up and began helping him. We're going to have to finish with this verse. Now, this could be the reason why he's going to Capernaum in the first place. Okay? Peter could have said, "Hey, my mother-in-law is sick," which is really a pretty cool one. You know, Kepha is he's concerned about his mother-in-law. She's sick, and Yeshua, you know, "I'd like you to come and heal her." Could be that they got there. We're not told. Okay, we're not told these things. Could be that he got there, and you know, Peter goes and says something to his mother-in-law, and Yeshua's kind of milling around there with the crowd. He says, "Hey, Yeshua, Adonai, sir, excuse me, just a moment. Got a little, you know, got something going on over here. I'd like you to come." And he goes, okay? And she's sick. And he touches her hand, and the fever left her, and she got up and began helping him. Okay, we're gonna have to finish with this verse, and here's what I want to bring out of this verse. The sickness was going to keep her from ministering to him. Okay, the sickness, whatever this fever and all these things were going on, doesn't matter what the cause for it. It could have been she was out in, you know, she had spent too much time out in the night air the night before. We don't know those things. Okay, Scripture doesn't tell us that. It's not important at this moment. Here's a synagogue in Capernaum, less than 100 yards. Is where we believe the house of Peter's mother-in-law is. Short walk, okay? It's where that big Catholic flying saucer thing is now. Some of you that have been there have seen pictures. Whoever built that crazy thing. He goes, and the point of the story is this, the point of the account is this, that which she had, the sickness that she had, was stopping her from ministering to him. And when he came in the room and he touched her, that left. It was the physical, intimate relationship of the touch that caused her to be able to come up from her bed and minister unto him. My question at the end of this today is this: what sickness is keeping you or me? Let me say us. What sickness is keeping us from ministering unto him? Probably not just a fever or something, it's all kinds of things. Our attitudes. Our attitude toward His authority. Our attitude toward Him is we haven't begun to trust Him. See, He will bring things. There's a desire that He has for us. And He uses various things in our life to bring things to the surface so that He can deal with them, so that He can touch it, so He can touch us, so that we will be free to minister to Him. Oh, I could list off things like materialism, status. List could go on and on and on. Ungratefulness, complaining, on and on and on. And every single one of us has got things in our life that we've said, okay, I'll let you do this, but stay out of that area of my life. Well, I'm not going to change this area of my life. I don't want to deal with that area of my life. And He's saying, unless you allow me to touch that, I can't heal you. Unless you allow me to touch you in that area, I cannot heal you. And because I cannot heal you there, you cannot minister to me at the level that I desire you to. Moral of the story is this. Whatever He desires is the best for us. Allow Him to touch every area of our life, including our heart inside, so that we can stand and we can then become the minister, the servant to Him, which is going to make us the servant to others too. See, that's ministry. When we minister to Him, then out of that ministry, we are able to minister to others. All right, I'm way past time today. Got to get this going. Got to get on the road Friday morning, way, way early about daylight. So if you're in Colorado, up in the mountains of Colorado, in Kingman, Arizona, if you're in up around Lancaster, California, any of those areas, somewhere in the midst of it, you know, I got a couple things I can possibly add. If you're in that area, come on out, and love to see you. And the other thing is pray about Sukkot. Okay, all those things. Maybe you can't go. Maybe it's not your time, and that's okay. But is your Sukkot going to be all about you, or is it going to be about Him? Is it going to be about His kingdom? Today, we have an opportunity that hasn't been for 2,000 years. I've seen the restoration of all things. You know what happens at the end of the restoration of all things? He appears. All right, got to go. Shavua Tov. Have a wonderful, blessed, prosperous, absolutely incredible week in front of you. For those of you that are in the midst of the fires, the floods, the heat, all these things, look up, for your redemption draws near. See you next week.
Ya'er Adonai panav elecha v'yichunecha. Yisa Adonai panav elecha v'yaseh Shalomecha, Shalom.